Hello and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, sitting in for Stephen Henderson today. What most of the world has feared for weeks is now reality. Russia has launched military operations in Ukraine. They've invaded. Russian President Vladimir Putin announced the operations late last night for those of us here in America, early morning for those in Ukraine and Russia. Almost immediately after that announcement, explosions were heard in several locations across Ukraine. Tomorrow here on the show, we're going to hear from Ukrainians and Ukrainian Americans here in Southeast Michigan. We also hope and plan to hear from contacts that we have in Ukraine on the ground. But this Russian violence, these crimes, they've made all of that uncertain. We're going to start today with one of Michigan's representatives in Congress reacting to this unprovoked invasion and what it means for Ukraine, as well as all of us here in the U.S. A little bit later, we will talk with Congresswoman Haley Stevens about her reelection campaign in Michigan's new 11th congressional district. But we felt like we had to start here with this sad and terrifying news from Ukraine. Congresswoman Stevens, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning.
So first of all, I just want to get your general reaction as you saw the news coming in late last night. What were you feeling? What were you thinking?
Look, it was a long and sobering and terrifying evening, terrifying for Ukrainian Americans here in Michigan and absolutely terrifying for the people of Ukraine who were attacked, injured, and innocent loss of life. And hearing the missiles come down, listening to the reading the president's statement, his outtake from his call with the head of Ukraine, it's just absolutely catastrophic. And this is a premeditated act of war being perpetuated by Vladimir Putin, and he needs to be held accountable.
So with that in mind, what is Congress's role at this point right now, and what do you envision that role being going forward?
Well, look, the administration is going to make a series of decisions. We're already seeing some of those come down in terms of sanctions and the role of the United States and our counterparts through NATO. And as it pertains to holding Russia accountable, it's actually really quite remarkable how many are stepping up across the world to support Ukraine and to condemn the Russians and this Russian aggression, which, mind you, I believe is doomed to fail. I think it is a feeble attempt of a weak leader who has lost his way in this pandemic. I have been dealing with the Russians for a considerable amount of time ever since I came into Congress due to the false imprisonment of my constituent, Paul Whelan. Mm. And as a member of a deliberative body in the United States House of Representatives, I want to see the House vote on a resolution to condemn Russia, particularly for its false imprisonment of Paul Whelan. I think that we need to make sure that we have resources. We need to get our budget passed and have a Department of Defense that is operating off of this year's budget rather than last year's. And that's what we're going to be going back to Washington to get done.
You bring up your constituent, Paul Whelan. How does this affect those efforts at this point? I mean, it's been difficult, to say the least, up to this point, but what does it mean for the any effort to try to free him at this point?
Yeah, look, it's been an incredibly long and drawn out situation, very painful for his family, who I admire very deeply. And we are going to continue to support his family and to push for Paul's release. I'm very pleased to see that the Biden administration has not lost sight of Mr. Whelan and another American counterpart, Trevor Reed, another Marine who's being falsely imprisoned, American Marine who's being falsely imprisoned in Russia, and is continuing to not only put them at the forefront, but remember that as we deal with the Russians and negotiate their release, that's got to be paramount. But this relationship will change. This will change. Our relationship with Russia is now different as of yesterday. It was changing as we headed into this unprovoked attack by the Russians into Ukraine. And I am concerned for Paul Whelan. I'm concerned for his family, but I am not going to stop fighting for his release.
And your colleague, Alyssa Slotkin, was tweeting yesterday about the idea of this new round of sanctions, about making sure that Congress comes back and finalizes that package. I'm curious, how effective do you think something like that could be, especially given the fact that at this point, so far, with the sanctions that have already been in place, Russia has not been deterred?
I think it's going to be incredibly damaging to the Russian economy and Russian people. This is something that we need to take into consideration, as Putin doesn't necessarily have the will of his people supporting his actions. And there's a lot of weaknesses. You have a political opponent of his who is in prison and is being mistreated, who is also releasing statements. This is Navalny. And we need to continue to expose those weaknesses in the Putin autocratic regime. Those sanctions will do that, and it will further isolate Russia from the rest of the world. They don't have a strong economy to begin with. And look, we are going to see the impacts of this back home. Oil already up, gas prices expected to go up during a time when gas prices are increasing. This isn't the result, though, of something the U.S. has done. This is a result of a madman who is launching a premeditated war on innocent people in a democratic country called Ukraine.
And can you walk us through a bit of what that specific package of sanctions would do? What is included in that?
Well, we're waiting for a full briefing from the administration and entering into a dialogue with the Biden administration and through the House committees that will be evaluating the sanctions. I know Nord Stream 2 is on the docket. I'm curious to learn if banking and how deep we will go with banking as well as other goods. And also, I'm going to take into consideration that our automotive industry here in Michigan is in a very trying time as it pertains to supply chain. And this isn't just for the big three, but a lot of our small and mid-sized manufacturers here in Michigan, and some of the ways in which they rely on Ukraine for goods. We've got a very complex and global supply chain, particularly here in Michigan with our automotive industry. And so I want to make sure that we, as we continue to support and stand with Ukraine, that we are able to continue those lines of trade, particularly for rare earth minerals that are supplied through that country. So it's not that we're in a wait and see mode, because the administration is absolutely rolling these sanctions out and is liaising with Congress. They've got a lot of leeway, and we'll continue to draw down on the expertise of our specialized House committees to support those efforts and be unequivocal. It is so important for us to be united right now. This is about democracy. Ukraine is a democracy. We have an autocratic nation with a reckless leader who imprisons and attempts to kill his political opponents, conducting an act of war on innocent people. Don't look away, because there were apartment buildings bombed last night, you know, men, women, children hurt, injured, and the like. And we have to be united as a country in terms of holding Russia accountable and standing up for the innocent people of Ukraine.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, sitting in for Stephen Henderson today. I'm speaking with Congresswoman Haley Stevens, a Democrat representing Michigan's 11th district, running for re-election in Michigan's new 11th congressional district. We're talking about the Russian invasion of Ukraine, which happened just within the last 12 hours or so. And we are also going to be talking a little bit later about her re-election bid and what that means and what she hopes voters will keep in mind signed in August in the primary against Congressman Andy Levin. If you want to get in on this conversation, please give us a call. You know, what questions do you have for Congresswoman Haley Stevens? What do you make of the U.S. response so far to Russian aggression in Ukraine and now this invasion? And are you worried about what this invasion in Ukraine will mean for us here in the United States and for the rest of the world? You can give us a call at 313-577-1019. Again, that's 313-577-1019. You can also use the hashtag Detroit Today on Twitter. We will see those and we will try to get those in the conversation as well. Congresswoman Stevens, do you personally foresee a scenario where the U.S. and or NATO would deploy troops in Ukraine on the ground? And if so, do you think that President Biden should get authorization from Congress first?
Well, the president shouldn't be acting unilaterally if we're going to deploy American troops. I think that's something we know is in our governing doctrines here in the United States. Certainly the role that NATO is going to play and where NATO troops are located in the western part of the country where many Ukrainians are fleeing is very symbolic. I think the ongoing role of NATO here is going to be essential. And look, we have to see how long and far this conflict goes. Does Russia back off? Right now, we see Putin threatening, countering U.S. actions and other actions from the West. And let's be really clear, we are not intimidated or afraid of Mr. Putin. I certainly am not going to be intimidated by his flagrant attempts to keep the West at bay and to continue to act in just unbelievable and deranged way as he tries to attack innocent people in Ukraine and drum up his own citizens for this war that's going to hurt their civilian base eventually as well. So look, the United States, in terms of deploying troops, we are a long way from that. We just ended a 20-year war in Afghanistan. I don't think anyone wants to see us take our own military or army into Russia right now. We've got other mechanisms to support people in Ukraine and to support their government right now. You know, an incredible leader right now in Ukraine, pulling on the international accords and working through the West to support his citizens, to support and protect an innocent life. And that's where this is going to be for right now. We don't need to jump the gun and rush to put American troops in harm's way overseas. But look, you know, if you're a country in Europe right now, this is a very different consideration. If you are Germany, that's a shared continent. We are an ocean away here in the United States of America.
Before we get to the phones, Congresswoman Stevens, I do want to talk a little bit about sort of the blame shifting that's been happening, or at least there's been attempts to talk about blame here, and including on the Ukrainian government. There are a lot of people trying to make the case that Ukraine is, you know, has been attacking, you know, Russians in Western Ukraine, and things like this. There has been this line about the quote unquote denazification of Ukraine, which, you know, the president of Ukraine is Jewish. It is, to me, as someone who is not an expert on Ukraine by any measures, it does seem absurd. But I'm curious what you think of what you're hearing from people who are sort of trying to make the case for Russia here.
Look, we don't need to Russian sympathize. We don't need to sympathize with an autocratic nation and pull it a dark history. I was at Shabbat dinner on Friday, and certainly there was just this past Friday, and you know this came up. And look, World War II, when this took, you know, when Ukraine was acting in a certain way, was absolutely very shameful. But that's not where we go today. And certainly with the president of Ukraine and his Jewish background, it is a, you know, it's a very different history right now playing out. We don't need to pull on the threads or even question our, you know, allied relationship with the Germans today. That is pulling on threads. We have a democratic nation. We have innocent people in Ukraine who are being attacked through acts of war by a leader of Russia, Mr. Putin, who is deranged, who has a viewpoint that he is going to recreate the Soviet Union. This is playing out on Western soil. It is completely unbelievable, and it will be damaging to world peace. So the United States is continuing to work in close coordination with our allies and our partners. President Biden has taken those actions to hold Russia accountable, and we are going to continue to act accordingly and stand strong for Ukraine. I encourage everyone to join in prayer, to recognize that we have a Ukrainian cultural center here in southeastern Michigan, a Ukrainian crisis response team that is acting here on the ground in the United States. My office is here to support people through constituent services, particularly vis-a-vis the State Department and on. We need to be together and united, and no question about where we are going to be supporting Ukraine and a democracy.
Let's go to the phones. The number is 313-577-1019. I want to go to Patty in Southfield. Patty, you're on Detroit Today. What would you like to say today?
Yeah, I just got a couple questions. You know, you talked about the sanctions. What will the banking sanctions do? And why is not Ukraine part of NATO? I heard something last night, and I don't know if it was right, that Russia and China vetoed that. So those are the couple of questions. And my last thing is, you know, I think it's very sad, but, you know, I also feel like here we are spending $650 billion to go to war to, you know, to help Russia, where we got a lot of problems in the United States that a lot of that money could go to.
Patty, I appreciate the comment. I believe you mean to help Ukraine. Is that correct?
Right.
Yeah. Thank you. Right. Patty, thank you again for the call. Congresswoman Stevens, how do you answer the questions that Patty has there, especially about the banking sanctions and so forth?
Look, this is going to be a cutting off of Russia from the global economy, and it is punishment for acts of war. It will be a cut to the nation and their ability to succeed economically, and their citizens will feel it. And we believe that it will convince, if that is the sanction that has taken place, the analysis is that will pressure Mr. Putin to withdraw. In terms of NATO, there's a long and storied history here of Ukraine's attempts to join NATO and why certain NATO members don't want them in NATO, and why this is being utilized by the Russians right now for this premeditated act of war that they are perpetuating in Ukraine. And it's really quite unfortunate. And I think that NATO will continue as an entity right now to play a role in calling this attack what it is, and protecting the loss of innocent life here.
We will have much more on the situation in Ukraine tomorrow here on Detroit Today. Coming up, we will continue this conversation with Congresswoman Haley Stevens. We'll talk about her reelection bid in the new 11th Congressional District and her primary against fellow Democratic incumbent Congressman Andy Levin. That's coming up on Detroit Today.
Bringing you news that matters.
Stories that impact your life.
Music from the Motor City and around the world.
This is
1019 WDET,
Detroit's NPR station.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 1019 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, sitting in for Stephen Henderson today. Stephen's taken some well-deserved time off today, and he will be back next week. But I am very glad to join you today, and I'm also very glad to join Congresswoman Haley Stevens, a Democrat representing Michigan's 11th Congressional District, running for re-election in Michigan's new 11th Congressional District. And we are talking right now about her re-election bid. bid, and we want to get you in the conversation as well. What questions do you have for Congresswoman Haley Stevens about her bid for reelection? What do you make of the primary between her and fellow Democratic incumbent Andy Levin? And what do you make of these new political maps that were drawn and approved by our new redistricting commission? Do you think they did the best job that they could? That they could have done under the circumstances. The number on the phones is 313-577-1019. Again, that's 313-577-1019. And Congresswoman Stevens, this new district, this 11th district, it includes a little over 40% of the constituents that you represent in your current district. That's the most of any other incumbent at this point. What do you make of the way Michigan's Redistricting Commission drew these lines?
Well, look, I'm excited to have an Oakland County seat in the United States Congress, and that's what the new Michigan's 11th district is. It was always a majority Oakland County seat, 60% of it was in Oakland County. I was really proud to flip this seat in 2018 from Republican to Democrat, help usher in a new majority in the Congress, reestablishing trust, security, delivery for the American people, protection for healthcare, and on. And now, we've gone through a redistricting process. Tragically, Michigan is losing a congressional seat again, just as we have since 1980, longer than I've been alive. And so the largest state geographically east of the Mississippi River will only be represented by 13 members of Congress come 2023.
You've criticized Congressman Levin for running in the new 11th district and not the new 10th district, which includes a lot of his current district. Even though you are the incumbent who shares the most territory and constituents in this new district, Congressman Levin does live in that district. You're moving to be in the district. Can you explain why you think why you are criticizing him for making that move, especially considering that he lives there and is raising a family there?
Well, look, I think that's a little bit of a journalistic extrapolation. I'm not interested in criticizing any of my colleagues. I was asked about his decision to run in the 11th district, and I just said that it was surprising, given that 70%, 512,000 of his constituents are in Michigan's 10th district. That is currently right now an open seat in Michigan. We don't have an incumbent running there. And for me, this is about our Democratic majority, voting rights, climate change, a woman's right to choose, passing common sense gun safety legislation. Why have a Democrat on Democratic primary if we have an open seat where, you as Mr. Levin represent 512,000 of those constituents that can run there? But certainly understanding that, you don't need to live in your congressional district, but he does live in the 11th district. It's likely very personal to him. I don't think I'm the only one asking that question, but understanding that this is likely going to be what it's going to be. And, I'm excited and grateful to be getting out and connecting with my constituents who've carried over in this 11th district, having the support of Congresswoman Brenda Lawrence, who represents the largest number of Democratic primary voters in the new 11th district, having her mentorship and leadership as I run along with her endorsement, and certainly just feeling grateful to connect with those new constituents and bring this district together, become the Democratic nominee, and get reelected in November so I can continue delivering for the people.
I don't mean to beat a dead horse here, but I just, because you said that your reaction was that you said you were surprised and that it was an extrapolation, I do want to, Fox 2 did quote you as saying, quote, "I couldn't imagine abandoning over 70% of my current constituents in an open and winnable congressional seat to primary a fellow Democrat." I'm wondering about that word abandoning when you're talking about constituents, especially, again, he lives in the district.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. I have a really close-knit relationship with all of my constituents. The work that I have done to get elected in 2018 and to win re-election in 2020, dozens and dozens of town halls, over 5,000 federal cases solved for my constituents. That's what I meant, right? Is when you have 500,000 people that you've been representing in an open seat, why wouldn't you continue to seek to represent them, right? It that to me was what I meant by, oh, I was surprised by his decision to run in a seat where, sure, he lives, but only represents a quarter of those constituents. Mm.
I do want to give you an opportunity to talk about the last two terms that you've been in Congress and what you view as some of your biggest accomplishments policy-wise. You know, what are some of those things that you hope that voters will keep in mind when they go to the ballot box, especially in August of this year?
Well, look, I'm, you know, the first woman to ever win Michigan's 11th district in its old configuration. I'm the first millennial Michigan ever sent to Congress. I'm intent on representing the voice of the future. I'm the vice chair of the House Science, Space and Technology Committee, ushering in a whole host of legislation to double scientific research funding, to invest in STEM education through equity and inclusion, working very closely with our schools, connecting with people all over Oakland County to solve problems, bring in new solutions. And look, you know, we've got a campaign with, you know, our eyes on the prize about what this means for Michigan's future, right? Having served in the Obama administration, obviously during the auto rescue where I served as chief of staff, but even to today, solving problems during a pandemic, making sure that we're getting our fair share of federal resources, working very closely with our mayors and municipal leaders.
So the new 11th congressional district is pretty solidly blue, I think it's safe to say. So this primary is sort of where the a lot of the attention is going to be. Not to discount, you know, any Republican or other candidate that might run in November, but this is sort of where a lot of voters are trying to make a tough decision, especially Democratic voters against two incumbents. You know, and I think that a lot of Democrats probably think to themselves, "Look, I just want to vote for a Democrat. What's the difference, right? What is the difference between these two candidates, especially because they both came into Congress at the same time? You know, can you offer some especially policy issues where you believe that you and Congressman Levin have some daylight between you, might have some significant disagreements on policy?
Well, I know in a Democratic primary, that's what's on everyone's mind. And it's true that Congressman Levin and I have a 96% similar voting record. I have 100% voting score with the AFL-CIO. You know, I know that I voted for the USMCA, the renegotiated NAFTA, to invest in the American workforce and invest in our Michigan economy and our Michigan labor force. And, you know, Mr. Levin wanted to see something else out of that trade agreement and did not vote for it. But at the end of the day, this is not my charge. I am running to be the Democratic nominee, but Haley Stevens, as a Democrat in a Republican, previously Republican-leaning district, wins for our Democratic values, voting rights, raising the minimum wage, paid family leave, and on. That is what I am running to do. And I want to bring reform back to the Congress. I want to make our government work better for people through transparency, through real debate, getting dark money out of politics and on. That is what I'm up to. I'm not looking to have a Democratic primary. I'm not sure what this is all about. Again, to, you know, why we are in this situation. My charge has been the 11th district. When Dave Trott was holding this seat, not having town halls, I stood up for people when no one thought this was possible, and we were successful. We made history. I became the first Democrat to hold the 11th district since before the moon landing. That's what this is all about. That's why I want this third term. That's what I'm going forward with. Remember who stood up for you when no one thought it was possible. Mm.
I also asked Congressman Levin that same question yesterday. He says that he thinks that you're both good Democrats. He did say that. But he says he also sees notable policy differences. He's an original co-sponsor of Medicare for All, which he says you haven't supported. Let's start there. What about Medicare for All and your record on that? What are your thoughts about that and Congressman Levin's support of it?
Well, look, time and time again, I have voted and continue to vote to protect people's health care. in the state of Michigan and backed up our governor who led the Medicaid expansion in the state. I have voted and co-sponsored the bills to lower the cost of prescription drugs. If you look at my healthcare voting record, it is perfect. I have always voted with the Democratic majority. I have, you know, taken those votes again as a Democrat in a Republican leaning district where people would come to the town halls and throw tomatoes at me and, you know, and say, what are you doing? And I'm saying, hey, I'm standing up for, you know, the woman whose door I knocked on in 2018, who was going through cancer treatment and looked me in the face and said, I can't believe that there are people trying to take away the protections for pre-existing conditions. You know, I have worked with our labor unions who've negotiated their health care, who want to see us continue with our same system, but certainly want to making sure that people aren't losing their job and being uninsured. Right. And so that's the progress. That's where we need to continue to go. I was just on an education and labor hearing. So, no, I'm very proud of my healthcare record in the United States Congress. And I'm going to continue to vote accordingly to protect people's care.
But for Democratic primary voters who do support a more universal healthcare system, Medicare for all, explain to them why you do not support that.
Well, look, in terms of becoming an original co-sponsor on bills such as Medicare for All, I'm looking at what is best for the here and now. We're in the middle of a global pandemic still. We've lived through a lot of disruption. A Medicare for All system, which, you know, arguably, right, might lower costs, might increase costs, you know, for the country, but also for the taxpayer. It's a lot of disruption in a very abrupt time. I've talked to seniors who are on Medicare. They say, hey, we're grateful for our Medicare, but it's really complicated setting it all up. It's really complicated getting signed up. So what do you say to the working parent, the working union member? Hey, we're going to put you on a system where you've got to feel your way around. You don't have your benefits manager. You don't have your same system. We need to get to a place where we have full coverage. We're almost there in Michigan vis-a-vis our Medicaid expansion. We've got to either do a public option. We've got to continue to fulfill the goals of the Affordable Care Act. We've got to continue to keep subsidies low. So look, that's where I've been on this. And I'm not afraid to talk about it.
Before we have to let you go, Congresswoman Stevens, I do want to get Ollie in Dearborn here on the conversation. Ollie, great to have you on Detroit today. What would you like to say?
Hello. I would like to ask Congresswoman Stevens about her 2020 endorsement of Mayor Mike Bloomberg. I heard the Congresswoman talk about values and talk about dark money. Mayor Bloomberg installed the racist stop and frisk program. He started a massive mass surveillance, discriminatory, illegal, unconstitutional surveillance program against the Muslim community. He also paid $2 million to help her get elected. So in this question of values and dark money, where does she stand on campaign finance reform? And why did she endorse Mayor Bloomberg?
Yeah, Ollie, I really appreciate the question. Congresswoman Stevens, talk about your endorsement of Mayor Bloomberg and the concerns Ollie has there.
Well, look, the last time I checked, the 2020 election is over. We are glad that Donald Trump was defeated. That was my goal, right, is we just needed to beat Donald Trump. I was really proud of our whole Democratic, slate of candidates running across the country. As I looked for that period of time where Mr. Bloomberg was in the race, it was about winning. And you can certainly see the number of people who were in his campaign, who are on the ground, and this and that. I'm not here. And look, we have a lot of questions. A lot of people who believe the big lie right now. I was in the Capitol on January 6th. You know, I am not here to relitigate an election that is over. I was the first Democrat member of Congress in Michigan alongside Congresswoman Lawrence to endorse Mr. Biden. I was very pleased to have worked for him when he was running, when he was the Democratic vice presidential nominee in 2008. He's doing a fantastic job. I'm going to be excited to campaign alongside him and Vice President Kamala Harris, who is a historic figure in her own right, which we can recognize as Black History Month comes to a conclusion in just a few days here. And that's what this is all about for me. We needed to get Trump out of office. We overwhelmingly were successful in doing that with Mr. Biden, and I was pleased to support his candidacy.
All right, Congresswoman Haley Stevens, I know I got to let you go. There are so many things that I wish we could have talked about today, from transit to the America Competes Act and microchips. There's just so many things. But, you know, there's a lot of time between now and the primary. And, you know, hopefully we'll be able to have you on soon so that we can talk about some more of these policy issues.
Really, we'll do just that. Yeah. Thank you so much, Jake.
Well, thank Bye-bye. You so much. Appreciate your time. All right, coming up on Detroit Today, we are going to talk about all of this political upheaval that the redistricting process has caused here in Michigan, especially for incumbents like Congresswoman Haley Stevens and Congressman Andy Levin. And we'll go back to some of the basics. Do you know who's running in your new congressional or state legislative districts? Do you even know what those districts look like? What do you need to know to prepare yourself for those contests in this election year? I'll talk with Gongwer, Michigan reporter Ben Solis next on Detroit Today.